They threw my daughter. They killed her and then threw her like she was a fucking piece of trash. They're going to have a bitch to find my daughter's body. How weird is that? For the state police to feel that I'm supposed to be okay with 6 years down the line and y'all still don't have no answers. No, y'all have answers. Y'all just don't want to give them to me.
I'm Jackie O'Brien, and this is episode 7 of Buried in Snow. And until new information comes forward, this will be the final installment of my 8-month-long investigation into the unsolved murder of Denise Hart, a beautiful 24-year-old student and mother whose story, at least the whole story, has gone untold until now. On December 23rd, 2015, 11 months after Denise Hart went missing, someone was walking their dog on Gap Road in Goshen, Vermont, when they came across human remains in a ditch on the side of the road. The area, known as Brandon Gap, is a physical gap or notch in Vermont's Green Mountains. It's located along Route 73, a 21-minute drive from the swamp where the car Denise drove was left burning, 13 miles away. Once she heard about the remains, Julie Scribner, the lead detective on Denise's case at the time, called Denise's mom, Deidre Robinson, who was at the children's hospital where she works.
Detective Julie called me, and she was like, hey, I was at work, and she was like, hey, I need to talk to you for a minute. And I was like, okay, give me a minute, because I was doing something. I was like, give me a minute, I'll call you right back. So she was like, are you buying a TV? And that's when the flags went up. I'm like, no, I'm not buying no TV. It was just the persistence that she had. You know, she wanted to tell me and got me turn on the news and see it on the news. So I said, yeah, matter of fact, I stopped what I was doing and walked off the floor. And she was like, hey, I just want to give you a heads up. We found skeleton remains, and then she started asking me about what Dennis Denise went to. And at that point, she was sounding like womp, 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 you know, like Charlie Brown. You know how you can hear all the kids, but when the adults talk, she started sounding like that real quick. I had to, you know, brace myself. So I told her, you know, I gave her the information. This was the day before Christmas Eve, the 24th, when I spoke to her, is when she confirmed that, yeah, it was my daughter.
After almost a year, Deidre finally knew where her daughter was.
Detective Julie, she made a promise to me. And really, she, even though it took 11 months and it was, like she said, good or bad, she brought my baby home to me. You know, not the way that I wanted her to come home. But at least I now know that, you know, because I didn't know if my daughter was dead or alive. I didn't know if she was being held somewhere. You know, we didn't know.
I asked Deidre what she felt in that moment.
Release. Because I knew. I was so heartbroken. I was... I'm still heartbroken. I'm still hurt. Nothing's changed. The phone really knocked the wind out of me. And I felt relieved. Because I now knew. I now knew. Because it killed me every day for 11 months. Not knowing if my child was dead or alive.
All we know about what was found when Denise's body was discovered is that she was shot in the head, the cause of death that criminology professor Jesenia Pizarro says is the hardest to solve.
The gun thing is just an issue of you don't leave physical evidence behind. Versus if you beat someone to death, there's going to be some kind of physical evidence. If you stab someone, it requires close contact. There's physical evidence.
I asked Vermont State Police if they did find any additional evidence with or around Denise's body, And while I got the standard, maybe we can tell you when the case is solved, Detective Julie did say this.
I will say that we were able to, with the discovery of her remains, we were able to collect evidence at that time.
Now, that could mean anything, right? Including the gunshot. So I asked detectives how their investigation changed once Denise's body was found.
I think it changed because, I mean, it went from just the, you know, just a missing person investigation, missing person under suspicious circumstances, to, you know, the crime of a homicide. So that, you know, in the days when it was a missing person investigation, you know, there were times we literally had dozens of detectives working on the case. And once it was a homicide investigation, we still had dozens of detectives working on the case. So, you know, I don't know how much it changed other than from the name missing person to homicide, but I'm not really sure what you're asking, how it changed. Like I said, we did recover evidence when we recovered her remains, but the investigation was, you know, continuing.
Someone she knew in Vermont told Deidre that Vermont State Police were holding three suspects after finding Denise's body, but no one was ever arrested. I asked Josh Prezo if he was one of them, and he said that he was not spoken to police after taking a polygraph in April. Todd Norris and Chris Richards, on the other hand... On December 21st, 2015, 2 days before Denise's body was recovered, Todd Norris posted on Facebook that he was home from jail. That Christmas Day, he updated his profile picture, which got various comments welcoming him home from prison, where Todd says Chris Richards put him and a bunch of others. The same woman that I told you I tried to Facebook message in the last episode, who alluded to Chris being at fault for Denise's disappearance in the comments of an earlier post, and said to me that Denise was doing things she shouldn't have been, as if doing something illegal makes your murder justified, commented on Todd's profile picture, quote, "News since you've been gone has been unreal, you know. Karma come around, and some I can't hardly wait." Over the course of the following week, Todd interchangeably posted the same pictures of his new car and a repost of his status from June saying, "Chris Richards from Leicester, Vermont is a confidential informant for the FBI. To me, he either continued to post this status just because he was now out of jail and still angry, or because something else happened. Were they two of the three suspects questioned after Denise's body was found? I have no idea because, as you know, Vermont State Police won't confirm anything with me, but the timeline does match up, so it's possible. And if Todd is reposting the status because of Denise, what does it mean that no one was arrested? On January 7th, 2016, Deidre finally got her daughter back.
The funeral home called me. It was like basically, it would have been a lot of money to get my daughter from there to here. So I told them to just cremate her for me. Detective Judy and another detective. It was very nice. They drove her up here for me.
To this day, Deidre has yet to receive a death certificate. On January 22nd, 2016, nearly a year after Denise went missing, and almost exactly 1 month after her body was recovered, Billy Mayette killed himself. Billy was a known friend of Josh Prezo's and lived right by where Denise's body was found. So when he killed himself, word around town was it was out of guilt, as Josh's accomplice. Locals reached out to Denise's family to share this intel, including one woman who doesn't want to be named, but says she knows Josh well and is convinced he and Billy had something to do with it. According to this woman, Josh himself was a police informant who had snitched on people to get out of jail time before. However, she did mix up some facts, like confusing Billy with his brother Joseph, So I take what she says with a grain of salt, while also knowing that I don't really know anything for sure, just the word of different people. And at this point, with so little information surrounding the case verified, I think we just need to put everything out on the table, knowing that all the talk can't be right, but somewhere beneath it lies the truth. So that being said, here's Josh's explanation for why Billy couldn't be involved.
Conveniently, just after this, shortly after this, a Billy Mayette, which was literally just over the mountain from where she was found on Brandon Gap, like literally 5 minutes over the mountain, he committed suicide. And it was, the rumor got started that he committed suicide because he just couldn't live with the guilt of doing what he did, that Billy Mayette wasn't smart enough to shoot himself in the foot or stab himself and kill himself, let alone do it to somebody else. He was a freaking complete whack job. He wouldn't have been able to premeditate anything to do anything along those lines, no matter if he even had help with somebody half as smart as he was.
According to Josh, it's more likely that this was just another part of Todd and Chris's plan.
You know how easy it would be to drive up Brandon Gap and do that? I think it was a setup to where whoever those people were, and Todd Norris and both Chris Richards, both knew Billy Mayette for many years and knew the circumstances. So, you know, looking back, I wouldn't doubt if it was all planned to make it look like that, take the heat off anybody else.
Chris Richards' dad did also live in Goshen. Not to say that you have to be connected to a town to dump a body there, but it would make sense if whoever killed Denise knew the area around Brandon Gap well, because she was hidden well enough to not be noticed for 11 months. I don't know exactly where on Gap Road Denise's body was, but I do know that trailheads on the road see foot traffic from day hikers and through hikers backpacking on the long trail. That's what I was doing in July 2015, when my sister and I got picked up by our mom in the pouring rain on the side of the same road where Denise lay in a ditch. We drove to the Brandon Motor Lodge and spent the night in the motel where 6 months earlier, Denise was too creeped out to stay herself. I can't tell you how much I wish I'd searched the grassy ditches and been able to shorten those painstaking 11 months for her family by 5. But I saw nothing. I knew nothing of Denise's disappearance and wouldn't for another 5 years when I went looking through Vermont's unsolved murders. I was living in Vermont the whole time Denise was missing, walking through the towns where she was last seen, and I heard nothing. Denise's name is the most recent on Vermont State Police's list of unsolved murders, but there has been barely any coverage in Vermont since her body was found. So Deidre asked Vermont State Police if she could come up and do a press release.
And you know, they turned me down. They told me, basically, name and family can't come up there. That's basically what I was told. Not in them words, but once again, you know how to read between the lines. I'm like, I'm just trying to get to the news media down there.
Vermont State Police told her she'd have to figure out how to do it from Connecticut herself. I don't even know how organizing that would work, but it shouldn't be up to the grieving mother to figure out. I don't know why the police wouldn't want Deidre's help calling out to the public for information. Like Jesenia Pizarro said in previous episodes, it's less likely for witnesses to come forward in cases involving drugs because they're likely users or dealers themselves and don't want to risk getting caught. And it's a lot easier to have that attitude, forget what you know and move on, when you aren't seeing the grief of those who love her. I put an emphasis on the people victims leave behind in my reporting, not only because they are victims too, but because when you hear someone speak about a person they love and have lost, it humanizes them. So much crime coverage focuses on the story of what happened and not the human lives affected. And when you see a violent crime as a story and not something that happened to a person with a life as full as your own, the things you know that aren't being told feel less important. Looking through Todd Norris's Facebook page, it's clear that people were talking about this case. They were able to post what they heard on a public platform, but didn't bother talking to police. And the limited media coverage there was never even mentioned that Denise was selling drugs, let alone talk to people around town. Posts made by Todd on the page suggest that he went back to jail sometime after February 9, 2016, and got out sometime in September 2017. When he updated his profile picture in November 2017, someone commented, "Hey," with a bunch of question marks, "you just got away with murder." The last post Todd made was on June 19, 2018, 3 days after Chris Richards died of an overdose. Todd posted a status that said, quote, "After wearing a wire on me, taking 3 years of my life, cost me $18,000, rot in hell, you SOB." 2 weeks later, on July 3rd, 2018, Todd Norris also died of an overdose.
I believe Todd Norris and Chris Richards were both, whatever happened to them happened. So, to be honest with you, I completely 100% feel and think that one of those two was the one that did it. So, not knowing that that's the way that they stopped looking or not, it just, I think all the points turn to one of them two, and if they're not here anymore, we can't really get blood from a stone. So,
Detective Julie Scribner was taken off the case in late February, early March, around 2 months after Denise's body was found. Julie had been the only officer on the case who cared about keeping Deidre in the loop, the only one who she thought saw her daughter as a person. She told Deidre that somebody else on the case would be in touch with her.
I waited for the person to call me. Still to this day, that person still has not called me. Still to this day, I still don't know about anything about the three people that were supposed to have been held. I don't know anything. Nothing at all. Nothing.
To get any updates from police today, Deidre says she has to call them, and when she does, they make her feel like a burden. Deidre believes by ignoring her, it's easier for police to ignore her daughter's case as well.
Out of sight, out of mind. If we don't deal with her mother, then we don't got to deal with this case. And that is so unfair. That is so unfair.
So much time passed without a call that Deidre just assumed Denise's case had been closed.
I felt like my child didn't mean nothing to them.
On my phone call with Vermont State Police detectives on October 6, 2020, I asked what the state of Denise's case is.
The case is still open and ongoing.
Denise's is still actually a very active investigation. And there may be periods of time in the past 5 years that, there was no new information coming in. And I know that the unit is, still working on some things that come in on that case on a regular basis.
There's been additional interviews and different warrants that have been written recently.
But in 6 years, nobody has reached out to Deidre. She's always had to call them. If there have been any new developments, they haven't been shared with the family. Detective Mike Note said this wasn't intentional, but a systemic problem they're trying to fix. I asked about one resource I know they have because it's mentioned on the Major Crime Unit's website, a victim liaison.
Yeah, so the person that's our advocate is Kate Brayton, and it is her job to reach out to families and try to relieve some of the burden of us trying to constantly communicate while we're, at the same time trying to investigate the cases. But she's also doing this role with every open homicide that we have. So she's contacting a lot of people on a regular basis.
I know for a fact that Deidre is not one of those people. The detectives I spoke to said they would get Kate to reach out to Deidre and update her on the case, as well as help her get Denise's death certificate.
You know what, Jackie? I think that this is probably a good opportunity for us to, like we were talking about earlier about connecting Kate Brayton with Ms. Robinson, as far as the victim's advocate. So I think this is a good opportunity for us to make that right.
Still, I asked for Kate's contact information and emailed her asking why she hadn't connected with anyone from Denise's family. This is how she responded. "Thank you for reaching out. My colleagues also reached out to me to talk about this case. In my role, I work directly with families, and any press inquiries are handled by sworn officers. I will reach out to the family soon and introduce myself and offer my support as I can. It may be helpful to know that my position was not created until 2017, and I work mainly on cases that have come in since that time, rather than retroactively on cases prior to 2017. However, now that this has been requested, I will make sure to add it to my work and will connect with the family. To which I said, I know she felt like contact completely fell out after 2016. On the Vermont State Police website, it says that you contact families with any progress in the case. So I'm just wondering, does this mean there has been no progress to report since you've taken on the role? She responded, I share information with families I have an established relationship with. If I have not had prior contact with a family, then I wouldn't share new information. That would be done by other members with connections to the case and the family. Once a relationship is established between a family and myself, I would then be in the position to call with updates. My not reaching out to Ms. Robinson in this case does not mean there hasn't been progress, just simply that I haven't been involved. At this point, I had had officers on the case tell me that it was her job to be in contact, and her saying that the officers should have been in contact. So I asked, okay, do you know who is at fault for not establishing a relationship with Ms. Robinson once Julie Scribner was taken off the case? At which point, she stopped responding to me and forwarded the email chain to Vermont State Police's Major Crime Unit Commander, Captain Scott Dunlap, who emailed me this. Last week, you interviewed Captain Scribner, Detective Sergeants Note and Truex. The question if progress has been made in this case should have come at that time. Kate Brayton speaks with the families, and she previously told you her role with the Hart family. Also, like Kate told you before, she only deals with the families and she does not handle any press inquiries. So I said to Captain Scott Dunlap, okay, I'm sorry, I'm just giving y'all the benefit of the doubt as I try to figure out why Ms. Robinson has felt ignored and forgotten about for the past 4 years. It's just confusing because in my interview with the Major Crimes Unit, detectives told me she was the person who should have been in contact. Then she said it should have been them. I'm just trying to figure out where this misunderstanding comes from, because the lack of communication has really bothered Ms. Robinson about her daughter's case over the years. Shockingly, this got no response. And even though both the detectives on the case and Kate Brayton said they would reach out to Deidre, as of May 5th, 2021, she is yet to hear from anyone at Vermont State Police. Whoever murdered Denise Hart might be dead, but someone knows something, a truth that her family deserves to know.
I'm left putting the pieces together. I'm left wondering, you know, am I ever going to get any justice? You know, is Trudy going to ever get justice, you know, with her son? You know, I don't see it. I don't see it, I'm being honest with you, and I shouldn't feel like that, but I don't see it.
Today, Denise's son Benny is 9 years old and is starting to ask questions about what happened to his mom. Questions Deidre can't answer.
You know, the hardest thing was the other day, me and my baby was coloring. And he turned to me and he says, Mom, he says, it's been a long time. He says, is my mom ever going to stop being an angel and come back? How hard it is to tell a 9-year-old. There's no coming back. But she shouldn't even be gone. She should be raising her child.
This January, Benny's father, Benicio Vasquez, was murdered by police in Hartford, Connecticut. Reports say he died of multiple gunshot wounds fired by members of the FBI's Northern Connecticut Gang Task Force and Connecticut Violent Crimes Task Force. He was 34 years old. Luckily, Benny has an amazing grandmother, Deidre Robinson, who it has been an honor for me to get to know. A woman who has dealt with so much over the past 6 years. On top of grieving her daughter's murder and raising a child, Deidre is a frontline worker who has spent her days at the Children's Hospital throughout the pandemic. She is an incredible, strong woman who I know will never stop fighting for her daughter to get the justice she deserves. Some people might think that Denise deserves justice less than others because she was selling drugs. Yeah, she was selling drugs. So fucking what? She was a mother in school. As someone a year younger than her when she was murdered, who bartends to make money, I have no idea how I would pay for that. You can make a hell of a lot more money selling drugs than any job you can get without a degree or training. It's really easy for people to condemn her for selling drugs if they've never been in that position. People are so quick to judge the worthiness of another person's life based on their actions, as if doing something illegal makes you less of a person. I don't care what someone has done, no one gets to decide that someone else's life should end. But more than what she was doing, Denise's case has received a lack of attention from police, the media, and the public because she was a Black woman. And that's not an opinion, because it's not something I can assess or fact check as a white person. When a person of color says they are treated differently because of their race, I believe them because I know I can't understand the extent to what that looks like or how it must feel. So when DJ Robinson says it's not about her selling drugs, it's about her race, I believe her.
I know a little thing about racism, and they always try to sweep it underneath the rug like it don't exist, but it exists. I lived in Allentown, Pennsylvania for years. Growing up as a kid, when racism was at its all-time high. So I know what it is when I see racism because I had it around me all my life growing up.
Instead of deciding if someone else's experience is valid in the context of your own life and privilege, listen to them. Fight for them. Choose empathy. Because justice is what love looks like in public. Someone out there knows who murdered Denise Hart. If you're that person, or you know anything about Denise's disappearance and murder, please contact Vermont State Police. You can submit tips anonymously by texting VTIPS to 274-637 or by following the link at vsp.vermont.gov/tipsubmit. This podcast is written, produced, and hosted by me, Jackie O'Brien, with music by Joseph McDade. I'd like to give a special thanks to Deidre Robinson, Cedric Robinson, Keitha McLegan, and Josh Prizo for their vulnerability in sharing their stories. Thank you to the amazing women, Tabitha Moore, Jesenia Pizarro, and Lori Patton, who gave their much-needed expert opinions. And yes, thank you to the Vermont State Police detectives, Julie Scribner, Mike Note, and Sam Truex, for sharing what they could. This podcast is dedicated to the life and memory of Denise Lynette Hart.